In the 6 years that I have been producing Bravo Brazos Valley and highlighting veterans, I have heard no more incredible story than Bob Pardo's. Bob Pardo and his wife, Catherine, live in College Station in a well-deserved retirement that followed years of service, that followed one particular day of service when Bob Pardo made military aviation history. It was March 10th, 1967, and Phantom IV fighter pilot Bob Pardo and his backseater Steve Wayne were fourth in an attack formation designed to take a key target, a steel manufacturing plant in North Vietnam. Hi, I'm Tom Turbeville. This is Bravo Brazos Valley, brought to you by Meese & Associates. Bob Pardo was a member of the 433rd Tactical Fighter Squadron. This mission to take out the steel mill had been in the works for some time.
We'd made several attempts to strike the target. However, each attempt was incomplete in that the weather was so bad, we could not get to the target. And on the 10th of March, the weather cleared just enough that we were able to complete the strike.
It did not take long, though, into this mission when things started to go bad for one of his buddies in another F-4, Earl Amon, and his backseater, Bob Houghton.
As we approached the target, about 40 miles north, Earl Amon, who was the number four man in our flight, was hit by an aircraft fire. A few lights came on, warning lights came on. As he proceeded, the lights started to go back up, systems recovered. The airplane was flying very well. He and his backseater, Bob Houghton, talked it over and decided that it would be fine if they continued the mission. So we continued on down towards the target.
Now understand that when he was hit, Earl Amon could have just radioed that he was hit, headed back to the base, but he stayed to complete the mission.
Just as the formation rolled in on the target, Earl got hit again. Since he was directly over the target, he saw no reason why he shouldn't continue. Go ahead and put his bombs on the target with everybody else.
Yeah, still Amon stayed with the mission, but indeed needed help, and he asked for it.
Actually, after they were hit the first time, he and Bob talked it over, and they decided that they would say a little prayer. So they swapped flying the airplane. One guy would fly while the other one prayed. Then they'd change control, and the other guy would have his little prayer.
Then it was Bob Pardo and Steve Wayne who encountered problems.
Pulling off the target, Steve and I were hit pretty heavy. But the main thing at that point is simply to keep the formation together and head outbound.
Mission complete. The next stage was a fuel check and a battle damage check. And that news was not good.
I was 2,000 pounds short of gas, which indicated that I at least might be able to make it to the tanker. But Earl was short 5,000 pounds. He was down to only 2,000 pounds remaining. That 2,000 pounds in a Phantom would not get him out of North Vietnam, much less to the tanker.
The numbers just did not add up, and there were decisions to make.
So it became obvious that he was not going to make it out of North Vietnam. Well, in the flatlands up there, if you go down, you basically have two different things that are going to happen. If the civilians captured you, they would probably kill you on the spot. If you were captured by the militia or the active military, you were going to prison, neither of which is a very good option.
What happened next is part of military aviation history and once was even depicted on an episode of the TV show JAG. Pardo's Push is what it was called, and tomorrow Bob Pardo will talk about it.
Yesterday,
I'm
met
Tom
Bob
Turbeville. Pardo of College Station, F-4 pilot in Vietnam, March 10th, 1967. Mission accomplished in taking out a North Vietnamese steel mill, but with a buddy, Earl Amon, in trouble in his F-4. Amon's Phantom had been hit twice during the attack and had only about 10 minutes of fuel left, longer than it took to get out of enemy territory. Hi, I'm Tom Turbeville. This is Bravo Brazos Valley, brought to you by Meese & Associates. Bob Pardo takes it from there.
Earl was having trouble keeping up with the formation, and so I started to lag behind and stay with him, just in case the MiGs came after us for a revenge kill on the way out. I still had missiles on board and significantly more fuel than he had. We simply flew southwest until we crossed the Red River, and so Earl felt that it was safe to climb. He wanted to climb as high as possible. So that when he flamed out, he could glide as far as he could.
But it was time for an idea, and quick.
He's simply going to run out of gas. And I thought, there's got to be something we can do to get him to the jungle and out of the flatlands here.
Yeah, Earl Amon wasn't going to make it without a push. It had never been done before.
And it occurred to me that perhaps if he would jettison the drag chute, which is right on the tail end of the airplane, that I could put the nose of my airplane into the drag chute compartment and push.
Well, that didn't work.
The turbulence coming off of his airplane was so great that when we got within about 3 feet of him, it was just throwing us all over the sky. So we had to abandon that.
So come up with a second idea.
Tried to put the top of our fuselage up against the belly of his airplane. And as we got within about a foot of his airplane, we could feel a vacuum or a suction pulling our airplane up against his. And we were going to have to eject, so we didn't want to damage the canopies and possibly not be able to eject.
Now, F-4s were originally made for the Navy and thus were equipped with tail hooks.
Well, I'm looking at the tail hook and I thought, well, it's about 6 feet long and it sticks down about a 45 degree angle below the airplane, gets us down below it pretty good. And I told Earl to drop the tail hook. This all happened about the same time. He's running out of gas very fast, and there's only about 200 pounds left. And I said, just go ahead and shut it down, get rid of the jet wash. And then we were able to move in, put his tail hook in the middle of our windshield. Once he flamed out, the rate of descent for the Phantom is about 3,000 feet a minute. So from 36,000 feet, we just had over 10 minutes, and we were going to be in the jungle. And we eased up very slowly, very gently, put it in the middle of the windshield, started adding power, and the vertical speed reduced to about 1,500 feet a minute. That essentially told us that we were going to double his glide distance.
But this was no easy invention at all.
Now, the hook swivels from side to side, and there was no way we could fly perfectly straight, so the hook would slide off the windshield.
Seemed to be going okay until
our left engine caught on fire. So we had to shut the left engine down. We went back in, tried it again. But now, with one engine, we were only able to hold the vertical speed at about 2,000 feet a minute. With one engine out, the airplane has a tendency to fly sideways. Ordinarily, you never restart an engine that's been on fire. But in this case, I thought the airplane's going to go in the jungle anyway. So I restarted the engine, and it lasted for about 2 minutes. Caught fire again, and I said, well, we've got to shut it down and leave it shut down. Otherwise, we may blow this thing up.
Finally came the moment that they all knew that Pardo's push had worked.
So we continued the remainder of the push, another 8 or 10 minutes on one engine. When we got down to about 6,000 feet above the ground, that's as low as I wanted to go because people start shooting at you with rifles and pistols and throwing rocks at you. So we backed out from under him. He did have one radio working, and we told him to go ahead and punch. And we saw both seats leave the airplane, watched both parachutes open.
To learn more about Pardo's push, go to any search engine and type Pardo's push. There is plenty to read, an incredible story. I'm Tom Turbeville. This is Bravo Brazos Valley.